This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 60, Lucio Fulci's City of the Living Dead.
Yes, this is the incredible City of the Living Dead, also known as Gates of Hell. And as we like to do with these Italian movies is play the soundtrack in the background, because one thing that Italian horror has are kick-ass soundtracks. Mm-hmm. This one is courtesy of Fabio Frizzi. And you were just saying you think this is one of the best soundtracks
ever? Yeah, maybe either this or maybe the Carpenter's Thing soundtrack.
Okay, the one that was composed by Ennio Morricone.
Ennio Morricone, yeah. It's hard to top this. This is a little blaxploitation right now, a little funk it up. A little, platform boots and on the one with George Clinton. But generally, it's, you know, your heavy keyboard and your ominous otherworldly evil. And right. That's the theme here. Like, this is otherworldly evil in this film, and that's what really appeals to us when it comes to Italian horror. Is, you know, generally we don't like supernatural, but there's something about Italian horror that just gets mm-hmm. to us. It really is all-encompassing horror.
Well, I mean, ostensibly this is quite similar to The Beyond. I mean, in The Beyond, which we discussed in an earlier podcast, they opened up a gate of hell. I mean, the gate of,
yes,
in this case,
it happened
the gate
to be
of
in
hell
a, yeah,
was in
a basement. Yeah,
was in the basement of a hotel in the bayou in Louisiana, mm-hmm. right? Here, the gate of hell is in this town called Dunwich, right?
Yes.
Which is interesting because that's a reference to the Dunwich Horror, which was a story by famed horror author H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes, and who is also known for, I guess, The Color from Outer Space, The Call of Cthulhu, mm-hmm. all this stuff. Like, as a kid...
Well, some of our favorite movies like Reanimator, From
yes.
Beyond, all these Castle Freak, a lot of these Stuart Gordon movies were based on Lovecraftian stories, so yeah.
He got a little sort of hammy and hoary at times, but he was a huge influence on Stephen King, and I remember as a kid, I got out every H.P. Lovecraft novel from the library. So there's just very few of them I haven't read. Now, this, of course, you know, it references the town of Dunwich, but this is not an adaptation of Lovecraft.
Not at
it's
all.
A
not
bit
at
of a
all.
Digression there, yep. because we happen to love H.P. Lovecraft.
If you're going to have a town, you know, a fictional town that's not even on the map, that no one knows, you know,
yeah.
if it even exists, that's basically, you know, was built
over Salem,
yeah. And is haunted by, you know, the ghost's past, and, you know, as the gates of hell. I mean, what better name it after a town that H.P. Lovecraft popularized?
Well, I guess it's Salem, Massachusetts. It sort of prompts the question, why were there palm trees all over the place? But obviously this thing was lensed in the deep south, but
yeah.
and in Italy as well. But again, you know, Dunwich, it sort of conjures up evil. There's the witch. I don't know. Maybe that's overdone. Anyway, in lieu of a port of a basement and an evil home, mm-hmm. an evil hotel, we have a mysterious death.
Yeah,
several
yeah.
mysterious
well,
deaths.
Well, I mean, you know, the movie starts with a scream, and right away we're in, like, American Gothic territory.
One of the most amazing openers of any film. Just incredible.
Yeah.
This dry ice-laden Gothic cemetery with a priest with bug eyes. That's just great.
So, we have this priest, and his name is Father Thomas. And
yeah.
he's just walking around in this daze in this graveyard, and suddenly he just decides to off himself.
Yes.
And that sets all the shit into motion.
Yes.
And as this is happening, in New York City, there's a coven, perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some women, they're having a seance.
Seance, yeah.
And one of the conjurers, I guess, you what do you call people who spin seances or whatever?
Bullshitters.
Yeah. Bullshitters, exactly. One of them is played by Katarina McCall,
yes.
who was also in Beyond, and her name is Mary, and all of a sudden she has this seizure. So when the priest kills himself
over in Dunwich, yeah,
in New York City, we have this woman having the seizure, and this. And I mean, basically, they figured he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this this cop right out of a blaxploitation film investigating her, and he's like,
with a trench coat with wide lapels, like, what's going on here?
He's like, where's the staff? Down the toilet? Like,
yeah, you know? He accuses them, and you know, finger points. You know, he lists off a litany of drugs that they're under the influence of.
Yep.
Yeah, you guys into the marijuana, and he doesn't say the Mary Jane, but he basically accuses them of just being druggies, and of course,
this is it, man.
This is it.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Incredible.
So then we had, in the Beyond, we had the Book of Abon, and this one we had the Book of Enoch. I mean, like I said,
lots of books.
There's a lot of similarities, but you know what? It really doesn't matter because this is an incredible film. To be honest, incredible film. We're back in Dunwich, and we see the character of Bob, played by
Giovanni Lombardo Radice.
Yes, and he's a. He's a bit of a nut, kind of a mute guy. When we first see him, he finds this like self-inflating blow-up doll. God knows what he's going to do with it.
It's a mask that turns into a blow-up doll, and then he proceeds. This is odd. Again, this is an Italian horror, right? Mm-hmm. So he's wandering around in an abandoned mansion.
Well, he's just wandering around in like a daze, and then
And he happens upon this mask, which then expands to become an inflatable doll.
Yes,
like you know.
And he's got this reputation in town. He's like, I don't know.
He's the Lothario of the town.
Local pervert.
Yeah. I was being charitable. Local perv.
But it's funny too, his name is Bob, because in another Fulci masterpiece, The House by the Cemetery, there's this kid, this really, really annoying, kind of disturbing looking kid whose name is Bob. And I swear to God, I've never heard the word Bob uttered more times in a movie than I did in House by the Cemetery.
Bob.
Hey, you know what? I guess Fulci likes his palindromic name, so there you go. We got Bob.
In House by the Cemetery? As well?
The kid. He had a kid named Bob.
It's a pretty American name. And Fulci is probably enamored with American culture, and nothing says strong and Americana like Bob. And if there's another
thing, and nothing says strong and Americana like Giovanni Lombardo Radice,
Well, in addition to hearing about, Bob, what about Bob for the, countless times during this film? Mm. I mean, how many times was it emphasized that the Book of Enoch is 4,000 years old? That must have occurred at least 3 or 4 times, to the point where it's imprinted on my brain.
Yep.
What is the Book of Enoch?
The Book of Ewok?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it was the book. We never really got into what the Book of Ebon was as well.
Some sort of tome that opens up some gate to hell. But, I mean, this is interesting because I think maybe the Book of Enoch was some sort of, like, harbinger of, like, saying, Nostradamus-like tome, which predicted that, by All Saints Day, if, the gate to hell isn't closed and it's going to, like, take over the entire world, and of course, the death of the priest
precipitated
the opening of the gate of hell. And the other thing that's really cool is that the priest just keeps popping up every day. And fucked up things happen every time he pops up. And we'll get to that. But one thing about Bob, I mean, he finds this really disgusting, decomposed, like, maggot-strewn body. And next thing you know, we're back in New York City.
Yes.
And Mary, who was presumed dead, is being buried.
Mary is quite contrary and being buried. And these two groundskeepers are just hilarious too. Like they're perverts. Forget about Bob. Like these guys are, making all these inappropriate jokes, and there's, they have some exposed, some skeleton in one scene.
Yeah.
They're just, they're not taking their job as seriously as they could.
What I didn't understand is, like, why is there no funeral for Mary? I mean, they're just burying her.
Yeah.
But there's this reporter, this really, like, sort of hard-bitten Columbo-esque.
He's chewing on a stogie all the time. Yeah.
Reporter played by Christopher George, who we saw in Day of the Animals. He was also
he was the authority figure there.
Yes. He's on the case. When Mary is being buried, well, Mary is
not... They don't much of a coroner, do they?
What's that?
Don't have much of a coroner?
Well, no,
I mean... This woman is supposed to have died as a result of being shot to death, essentially. And you'd think...
Frightened to death. They said that her heart gave out, she was frightened to death, but she was actually very much alive. And
this was would be a woman in her, I guess, early 30s. Mm-hmm. So the fact that this didn't, you know, raise any alarm bells down at the coroner's office, it's like, sure, cause of death, you know.
Frightened to death?
Yeah, sure, click off that box.
No funeral?
No.
Yep. In the grave you go. And not even fully, because then the grave diggers are like, oh, it's 5 o'clock, union rules, you know.
Yeah, union rules, so. Got to get out of there.
So, Mary comes to life in the coffin, and this is an incredible scene because she's just clawing furiously, trying to get out, and she's screaming. And the reporter,
her screams finally garner the attention of this hard-bitten, hard-boiled reporter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he takes a pickaxe and tries to extricate this, you know, person from the crypt. And this scene was really amazing. Like this
scene, by the way, was pretty much taken wholesale by Quentin Tarantino in Kill Bill.
Hmm.
He referenced the scene entirely, where there's a scene where Uma Thurman's character Beatrice was buried alive, and you know, there was a pickaxe trying
lots
to extricate her.
I was wincing repeatedly.
Yeah, because every
time kept getting near her eye.
Exactly.
It's just, that was incredible.
Dude, this is a Fulci movie.
Yeah, we know the eyes feature prominently.
Always. Yeah. How many zooms to the eyes? Yeah. This is going to happen over and over and over again in a Fulci movie. But, yeah, he gets her out, and all of a sudden, I mean, she was dead, now she's alive, and now they're going to go and take a road trip to Massachusetts.
Just as what you'd want, you'd want to do.
Yeah, I mean, basically...
not say years of therapy. No, I'm going to go on a road trip to find this elusive, evil town with some random journalist.
Yeah, which is really funny because, I mean, you would think that if somebody was going to be conscripted to find the gate of hell and close it, it would be like maybe some sort of priest or someone from the Vatican or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not this, you know, cigar-chomping reporter.
Skeptic,
and this woman who was literally pushing up daisies not even 3 days ago. But hey, who the fuck cares? Whatever gets the plot going, right?
Yeah.
So, shit is happening in Dunwich. I mean, oh god, man. The dry ice is rolling in.
It's rolling in. We gotta say, the local tavern is something to behold in Dunwich.
Yeah.
It is Junie's Lounge.
Yeah, this is not Cheers.
they do have a flickering Schlitz on tap sign. That's, and I think... It's fluorescent orange sign that's blinking like your typical tavern, and I think the impetus for that was to underscore the otherworldly nature of both the surrounding town and its, you know, its pure evilness, for lack of a better word, and the normalcy going on in this bar. So to underscore, like, obviously two different color schemes that were used by the cinematographer.
Yep.
This place is inhabited by a group of bar flies.
Well, two rummies, basically.
Yeah.
it's almost like Moe's Tavern. Like, you got your three regulars, that's about it, yeah. And, yeah, a mirror breaks, and then a wall cracks, and...
Yeah, this is a newly constructed building, so the bartender is like, oh, shit, you know, what's going on here? Lousy. You can't, you know, good work is so hard to find. They got this big, you know, crack down the middle of this supporting beam or whatever it was, like the brick wall. And things, as you said, start to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Bob, who's, you know, I mean, he's homeless. He's wandering around. He's looking for a place to stay. He's got this girlfriend, Emily. And at one point, she's walking around, and all of a sudden, the priest pops up and takes a handful of, like, maggots and mud and just squishes into her face and basically strangles her to death. Now, if that's not gory enough for you, this we're going to now get into, in my opinion, one of the best scenes in horror history. This is another resident of Dunwich, and she's making out in the car with her boyfriend, Timmy. And as they're making out, boom, flash, she sees the hung priest. All of a sudden, Rose bleeds from the eyes, and then literally pukes her guts out.
She pukes her guts out.
And when I say pukes her guts out, again, I'm saying literally.
Her viscera just emerge very slowly from her mouth, and that was intense. I don't know the background of how this was filmed, but this is not your standard, you know, something you might see at Halloween, where it's just like this extended piece of intestine.
No,
this looked like somebody's gallbladder. Like it was a you know, maroon colored viscera that was coming out of her. It was fucking disgusting. Pardon my French.
It's incredible. Like this is one of the best set pieces in horror history.
And that was preceded by bleeding from the eyes in a really realistic fashion, which in a, of itself could have grossed out, I think, you know, 2/3 of viewers.
And don't forget that afterwards, they grab the zombie, the demon, whatever, grabs Timmy, her boyfriend, by the back of the head and squishes his brain.
His brain right into
So there's like there's a lot of brain squishing in this movie.
Yes.
Of course, Bob is blamed for the death of Emily. Right?
Yeah, and rightly so. Well, he's the town perv.
Uh huh. And so Bob the palindrome, you know, he's he has an incredible death as well. And this is like this could be the second greatest scene in horror history.
This is fantastic.
This is another set piece.
His very attractive braless girlfriend has got, you know, she's got her her weed pipe, and she sticks it in the front of her pants, and she goes out to meet her beau. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as one is wont to do, you go meet your best girl in the back seat of your the car. But this potential coitus is interrupted
by the father.
The father. And this is quite ridiculous. For some reason, I guess the father gets possessed, and he interrupts their liaison. And in his, I guess this is in the garage. Mm-hmm. This is where the car is.
Yeah.
He's got a drill in his shop.
Right.
And it is whirring. He grabs the head of poor Bob.
Yeah.
Slams it down on the bench. And Bob is drilled through.
From one temple to the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, straight through his head. And another that was incredibly
disgusting.
Great. I mean, when I interviewed Giovanni
Lombardo Radice
at Shockstock, and you can hear the interview on you know, one of our foreign podcasts.
Yeah.
I asked him, I said, you know, you have a reputation for like getting destroyed in movies in the most horrifically awful ways. And, you know, how did this come about? And I don't recall his answer, but it was something along the lines of, oh, I guess, you know, the filmmakers I work with are very sadistic and I had a face that they just wanted to abuse or something. But, I mean, that's the whole thing about Radice, is that he basically, like, in so many movies, the guy just gets... He's like a jobber. I mean, Italian horror. I mean, he just gets destroyed. So, yeah, but anyway, we got, you know, so there's all this fucking shit happening in Dunwich, and we also have the reporter and Mary racing over there to try and somehow close the gate to hell. I don't remember what they had to do. It was
I guess find the priest's body. Now, that's what they had to do later. And there's also, we can't forget about another authority figure in this film. Mm-hmm. He was an incredibly ineffectual psychiatrist.
Oh, yes. This, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because here we have a town. Again, this is like a portal to hell, okay?
Yeah.
A town that's cursed. And there's one psychiatrist. And can you imagine being this only psychiatrist working in Dunwich? And how many calls you'd have to take?
Yeah.
And this man, I believe his name is Jerry.
Yes.
He made house calls.
Yeah?
Yeah. So you're going to say about, we have this ineffectual psychiatrist,
And I guess he's got one of his, who is it? Sandra is the woman's name? On his couch talking about her ordeal. And he brings up incest in the therapist session. So again, it speaks to, like, you know, how do they vet this guy? Like, how is this guy board certified? And he's got, like, a la James Bond, he's got this, like, maybe this is a therapeutic tool, you know, pets or therapy. Mm-hmm. He's got a little gray kitten.
Mm-hmm.
And during one of the sessions, it becomes possessed as well and scratches the hell out of his patient, Sandra.
But, you know, the other thing I found hilarious, too, is, I mean, when you're seeing a psychiatrist, there's such a thing as doctor-patient confidentiality.
Yes.
Their session gets interrupted by, at this point, it was Emily, who's like, I'm going to go see Bob, and da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, his paramour. I guess she was his girlfriend.
Bob had two girls. There was again, like, it doesn't really matter, right? Because there's Emily.
No.
And then there was a girl that was trying to smoke the joint. They both were kind of sympathetic towards Bob.
This is a, yeah.
And, you know, I guess Bob was a Lothario. He was the pedophiliac, perverted Lothario who women took to.
Who knows, you know?
The animal magnetism of Giovanni.
The people
Lombardi.
Named Lombardo.
Lombardo, yeah. Lombardi, exactly.
Yeah. Full disclosure, that's the surname of one of your podcasters here.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, no, he was, Jerry, the psychiatrist, yeah, he was definitely a bit of a character. But anyway.
And they all, of course, convene later on, as we find out.
Yes, they do. But before they convene, and this is really funny, because they're racing, they're trying to get to Dunwich, and at one point, I mean, they're getting lost, and I'm talking about the reporter and Mary, mm-hmm. and they're asking for directions, and at one point they're given this really weird map, and Mary gets hungry. It's like, oh, come on, let's just stop for some food.
Yeah, it's like, sample the local cuisine. It's a weird, like, yeah.
This is the end of the world if you know it. Yeah, the gates of hell are going to open up. The world is going to be, you know, demons and zombies are going to be crawling over the world and taking, oh, and that's the end of that. But hey, you know what? I got to fill my belly.
Yeah.
Let's go see if there's like a Denny's or something,
yeah.
right?
Well, that would be hell, yeah.
So, yeah, eventually they do convene. And then we have another great scene, man. It's just like one. Honestly, this movie, it's nothing but just a collection of incredible
set pieces.
And this is the maggot bath.
Yes. Holy crap. Yeah. What is it about maggots that feature so prominently in Italian horror?
Mm-hmm.
We discussed them in Phenomena.
Yep.
We discussed them in
Suspiria.
Suspiria.
Mm-hmm.
But by far, this was the greatest. I thought this was fucking disgusting.
Yep.
Absolutely vile. The doors, just the glass doors just burst open.
There's a lot of wind in this movie. It's a very windy movie.
Yeah. Which I guess they used, I guess, I think hovercrafts to...
This almost has a bit of a Pink Floyd vibe to it.
Yes, right? Yeah.
They
used hovercraft propellers to generate wind in this film. And glass doors burst open and maggots just come flying through. And we're talking,
thousands.
But yeah, they're underfoot, they're covering their faces. It's just unbelievable.
And when that's over, it's Jerry, the psychiatrist, says, okay, well, it's all over now, but it's really just beginning. I mean, there's more zombies. There's more brain squishing. Our intrepid reporter gets his brain squished. Bob comes back. Everyone's coming back. Emily's coming back. You know, the dead have risen. More bleeding from the eyes. And on and on and on and on. Leading to, you know, the climactic showdown between Jerry and the priest. And I guess we'll stop there in terms of, like, describing the plot, because we don't want to spoil everything. Although I will say that the ending was very bizarre. It ended on a very confusing note.
Mm-hmm.
The very final scene.
Yeah. Almost as confusing as the finale of The Sopranos, where it just sort of cut away and... Geez, we don't want to give away too much there, but it's wrought with ambiguity and just weirdness.
But again, like we talked about this with The Beyond, like when it comes to a Fulci film, like it's not so much connecting the dots. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean? Why did that happen? You know, what precipitated this and that? It's just a matter of like the atmosphere, the dreamlike logic, and the beautiful,
stunning gore.
I was gonna say, like, you know, just. Incredibly transcendent.
Yeah.
Oh, squishy, disgusting, nauseating, like, whatever adjective you want, gore. But, like, in the hands of this master, Lucio Fulci, when he was operating in his prime, nobody, and I repeat, nobody, could shoot gore like Fulci. You know? And then when you combine his set pieces, his atmosphere,
his
cinematography,
music.
The music, the special effects... All that, and you got something so special that nobody does it like that anymore.
Yeah, it's often one of these factors you cited that is lacking from the modern zombie film. It's definitely, if it's in the top two, it would have to be, well, I mean, this incredible soundtrack for one. This is beyond soundtrack non-parade.
Yes.
Nobody does it like this. This alone scares me. This gives me the bloody creeps.
Yeah, for sure, man. This could loosen your bowels all by itself. You know what I mean?
And the gore, for sure, where it just... the standard shuffling zombie is basically just cannon fodder for the hero who's ducking behind a tree and just shoots his head out with a rifle. But there's no sense of, you know, of real horror in the way that Fulci has shot these things. I mean, the victims and the what they're put through really sets him apart.
And if I can just, you know, kind of throw in a little personal anecdote, I mean, there's something about the Fulci zombie. I mean, when you look at Zombie, right?
Yeah.
The film Zombie. Mm-hmm. When you look at The Beyond, when you look at this one here, Gates of Hell.
They ooze.
They ooze. There's something, like, they have this certain disgusting, like, je ne sais quoi about them that no other zombie, I'm talking even the Romero zombies, right up to The Walking Dead. And I mean, The Walking Dead, say what about that show, the makeup is done by Greg Nicotero, he's a master. No other zombie looks like the Fulci zombie. So, as you know, Chris, I'm sort of like a self-styled amateur makeup artist, right?
Yes.
And I've learned a few tricks or two on how to, like, you know, do special effects makeup, and I can, you know, I can make a pretty good zombie face, right?
For sure.
Well, I mean, 1 year before I started doing this myself, I actually paid a professional makeup artist to make myself up as a zombie for Halloween because I didn't know anything about liquid latex, and I, you know, what happened was I ended up observing her in action and then sort of looking at the tools of the trade, buying it, and then doing it myself, but I digress. Anyway, this was a professional makeup artist. I was getting myself done up for a Halloween party, and I said, yeah, why don't you make me up as a zombie? She goes, okay. But I said, no, I want you up to be a Fulci zombie, like a Fulci-esque zombie. You know, she goes, so you want to be a zombie? I'm like, no, a Fulci zombie. Yeah. You don't understand, right? Like, I want to look like the cover of the, you know, the zombie VHS box for zombie.
Yeah,
you know?
Which, like, is indelibly stamped in my mind. That, you know, is, it's almost got a mummy kind of quality to it.
Yeah, yeah, like, you know, a hole in the eye socket, maggots coming off my flesh and everything. God bless her. I sent her some reference photos. You know, she tried, but then I looked. It was good, but, you know, I still didn't have that oozing quality that the Fulci zombie has.
But we did go out on a Halloween to a party, mm-hmm. and you did go out in full regalia, and you were oozing and peeling. And we went out into a Halloween party. It was, who was it? Rue Morgue.
Yeah.
We're having
this
a party.
Rue Morgue prior, the year prior.
Okay, but when we went out, we went on public transit over there and we took a trolley, and that caused quite a scene.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
I think I do a pretty good job.
That was unbelievable. Yeah. It's disgusting to look at it for me now on Facebook. It's revolting. So yeah, and that's a testament to how accurately you replicated it yourself as a self-styled amateur makeup artist.
Well,
this is,
sir,
incredible. Yeah.
Well, thank you, sir.
Oh yeah.
So, what did we learn?
Well, I learned, in addition to the score and the otherworldly weirdness and stomach-churning, violent grotesquerie, there's some great lines in here too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the psychiatrist who says at one point, "I need a good stiff drink, the only medicine."
Yeah.
You know,
the only medicine.
Mention the Hippocratic Oath.
Yeah, a good and, stiff drink. There's nothing better, you know, when you're trying to stave off the zombie apocalypse and then be shit faced.
Yeah,
know?
Well. And the other one of my favorites is, well, two of them, I guess, after they find a body in this house. I think Sandra, the woman, says, "I don't think I can stay here tonight." Stands to reason. And I think, the body disappeared. And the other one was, "Bodies don't just get up and walk away." Which I guess negates the prior point I just made there. But anyway, Dunwich, incredible. The City of the Living Dead.
City of the Living Dead, a.k.a. Gates of Hell, we love you. So,
yeah.
Star
open
rating.
Your mind to these gates.
Yes, indeed.
And star rating. Oh,
and don't, and again, like, don't look for logic. Don't look for linear progression. Don't ask yourself too many questions. Don't go with a weak stomach. Mm-hmm. Just enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, star rating. I mean, I'm going to be a little. I am biased because I am a Fulci fanatic. I'm going to give this one. It's not my favorite Fulci film. Maybe my third favorite, but I'm going to give it 4 solid stars.
Yeah, I agree. A few little pacing issues here and there, but maybe that was just calm before the storm, just to further enhance, you know, what followed. But
so four obstructed intestines for me.
Yes, four gallbladders emerging from gullets out of five, yes. Even a 4.5 too.
Awesome.
And this would be definitely a solid introduction to his canon.
I'd say so. Yeah.
And then we're back to the blaxploitation. And right. We'll end where we began.
You don't recall the shaft...
investigating officer?
There you go.
Yeah, so. I can dig him and I can dig this.
Yeah.
Anyway, for more, check out our podcast, of course, every week, and our associated website, Monday, Wednesday, sometimes Thursday, www.reallyawfulmovies.com. We're part of the Crypt TV network as well. And be sure to check that out, too. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care.